From KUAR News in Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman. President Trump's announcement that the U.S. is preparing to impose a 25% tariff on steel imports and a 10% tariff on aluminum may be pointed at China, but certainly has implications here at home. Arkansas is one of the top steel-producing counties in the nation, and it's just about in U.S. Representative Rick Crawford's backyard. The congressman joins us now. Thanks a lot for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
There's certainly a lot to get into in terms of how this spreads out maybe to other parts of the economy. But first, if we can, just try to focus on actual steel itself. China's seen new heights in recent years, makes 49% of the world's steel. The U.S. is in fifth at 5%. What's your general reaction to this idea of tariffs on steel?
This idea came about as a result of input from the steel industry. And the steel industry, which is a very, very present part of my district, the first congressional district that I represent, about 6,000 jobs in the steel industry in the first district, somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 steel industry facilities. That includes mills and some of the service industry and other fabrication industry that sort of aggregate, that coalesce around steel mills. And so this is a decision or recommendations made by the steel industry that were really very informed, and they did not develop in a vacuum. This is a result of China's continuing action and really belligerence in the marketplace. They produce way over capacity, somewhere in the neighborhood of, there's about 700 million metric tons on the market that's mm-hmm. being dumped. Not all of that's being dumped in the United States, but obviously sure. a significant amount of dumping taking place in the U.S. market at a deep discount to U.S. production.
You mentioned some of the tremendous success that Arkansas has had in steel in the first congressional district. Output, according to the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, has jumped 40% just since 2009. What do you make of Arkansas's ability to succeed, even though there's supposedly this very threatening, tough environment?
Well, I mean, look, there's obviously a market here, and we want to make sure that our domestic producers are able to avail themselves of that. If, as somebody who represents a pretty big steel industry, several different companies, in primarily located in Mississippi County, but there are other locations in the state as well.
Right.
I'm going to take them at their word, and our mills nationwide are probably at about 70% capacity at that. And if we're losing market share here domestically to Chinese dumped goods, then that's a problem. And then, quite frankly, something that I haven't discussed, but I have some concerns yeah. about the quality of the product they're dumping onto the market. And so we're now about to wrestle with an infrastructure bill, and the steel industry is going to play heavily into that. And we want to make sure that we're putting quality products into these infrastructure projects so they're not crumbling around us as a result of secondary quality from suppliers that really are producing over capacity and looking for markets to dump inferior quality.
And for our listeners that don't know, you do have some special insight, I guess, about U.S. mills elsewhere in the country. You are the chairman of the Steel Caucus in the U.S.
Right.
House. So we mentioned a little bit that some of the steel comes from China. It's about $2 billion out of the $29 billion worth of steel that the U.S. imports. Other places come from allies, particularly Canada is important in the U.S. steel trade. Do you think China's a scapegoat here, or how do we assess where the tariff should be applied?
Well, we talk about direct imports from China, but we also need to address the transshipment issue, and that is these proxy nations that use Chinese goods, finished goods that get a stamp from, maybe say the Philippines or Malaysia or something like that, and they enter the supply chain, but they are in fact Chinese products. And so mm-hmm. that's one issue. The other issue is we're talking about finished goods here. I think we ought to probably refine this a little bit and just strictly focus on those finished goods that are coming in. And they're primarily what you would call OCTG goods, tube and pipe. OCTG is oil country tubular goods. And that goes into our energy infrastructure, our drilling rigs and things like this. And so when we start to see products enter the marketplace from Korea, which is a transshipment company, there are no rigs in Korea. So there's no reason why they should be making those products other than to access the demand here in the United States. And so they're doing that as a proxy nation for China. And there's a laundry list of other nations that do this, which is why the president, at the request of the steel industry and the Secretary of Commerce, he announced he would implement an across-the-board tariff for all these finished products entering the supply chain. And what I think we need to do is now look at, like you said, China is not the number one importer. In total, that may be true. But or you're probably calculating some semi-finished goods as well. For example, slab. We'd get slab imports from other nations, and those products, those inputs are finished out in mills here in the United States and enter our supply chain, a lot of times in the automotive industry. Some of them may be in the appliance industry or what have you. And so I think we could refine that a little bit and say we're not going to allow finished goods of a certain kind to enter the U.S. market without the 25% tariff. That would be maybe a more targeted approach, but you almost have to adopt across the board, because otherwise we're going to be playing whack-a-mole with China for years to come, because we address this list of what we consider to be transshipment offenders or proxies of China, and they'll go find 10 or 15 more that they can play ball with. And so we've got to address it comprehensively, but I do think there's room to adjust that with regard to finished goods versus semi-finished goods.
Just got a couple more questions real quick. This one's sort of a political one more than an economics one, but this issue really blurs a lot of traditional lines across parties, across industries, across job types. So I'll just read off a couple things. Senator Ben Sasse in Nebraska said it sounds like a leftist policy protectionism to him. Well, on the other hand, U.S. Steelworkers Union President Leo Girard praised the president. He said Obama failed in this area. What do you make of this weird coalition of people that don't always stand together? And it seems like there's a place for organized labor in some of this.
Well, it's a little bit unusual. There's no question about that. And I would say, though, that as I said, the information that was provided is really kind of the result of years of research, economic research done by the steel industry. And the last thing that the steel industry wants to do is to be punitive to their own domestic customer base. So they don't want to see a policy implemented that creates problems or alienates their customers from their supply. The whole point is to level the playing field and make them competitive, not necessarily compel U.S. Manufacturers to buy U.S. goods per se. But you know, when you're making the decision based on bottom line, and you've got the choice between dumped goods that are brought in here by countries that are heavily subsidized, and they're undercutting our domestic market, and so essentially setting the price at a much lower rate, that's punitive to our own industry, number one. Number two, I mean, you certainly can't blame a manufacturer for making that choice, but we also have to address the quality of the product that's entering the market as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a few other considerations, but I want people to understand that the steel industry just was not, you know, off the cuff, hey, let's go after China. This is a result of years of bad acting by China. And, you know, so folks say, well, you don't want to spark a trade war. Well, I would argue that we're already in a trade war, and that maybe this is our first salvo in response to what China has been doing for many, many years. And so I think it's appropriate for us to take some kind of action. And I don't think the steel industry wants to hurt their own domestic customers. And so I think this is probably the result of a lot of study on the part of the steel industry.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, and this will be, I think, will be a good way to close the conversation as well, how it affects other industries, perhaps a bigger industry than the, not to discount steel in your district, but agriculture, of course. You met with members of the Arkansas Farm Bureau today. I was hoping you could share a little bit about that conversation. They brought up two things. One, the cost of aluminum and steel goods being passed on to consumers, whether it be in actual cans of food or heavy farm equipment. And the second was that agriculture is traditionally one of the first targets if there is a trade tiff.
Yeah, that's true. Agriculture is one of the most sensitive politically, socially, culturally when we talk about trade deals. And so there's no question that there's it's going to come up. However, I think there's some important things for people to note. Number one, China, I think there's a lot of bluster here because China just absolutely cannot get by without U.S. Ag commodities, primarily soybeans, but others as well. And the reason for that is as their economy has improved and they've made investments in their protein sector, for example, livestock, that's good that they can raise livestock to address their own domestic consumption, but they don't have the resources to feed that livestock. And so not only do they need the soybeans themselves for their population consumption, but now they've got the added dynamic of needing extra to feed their own livestock. And so their economic conditions are such that they're going to rely heavily on the United States. That's number one. Number two, Argentina is in the throes of a pretty major drought. And so as they start to harvest, which we are, you know, days, weeks away from full-on harvest in Argentina, the results are going to be very, very low yields, and there's not going to be much demand for Argentine soybeans on the world market. So China, being the largest consumer, will continue to do business with the United States as a matter of necessity. What they will also do, though, is to continue to raise questions like they've done with the grain sorghum issue. And really what they do is they just sort of, you know, kind of peck away and find little areas to exploit with regard to the United States and some of the trade deals that we have, and always trying to get a better deal for themselves. And, you know, that's what they do. And so it should come as no surprise that our president is trying to get a better deal for us. He campaigned on that. This should come as no surprise to anyone because he specifically mentioned taking an aggressive posture with China and U.S. steel. So I don't think there should be any surprises here. But again, it's very early, and so way too soon to pronounce doom and gloom.
I've been speaking with U.S. Representative Rick Crawford of Arkansas's 1st District, based out of Jonesboro. He's also the chair of the House Steel Caucus. Thanks as always, Congressman.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
From KUAR News in Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman.